Welcome to What's Eric Eating? Culture Map's look at all things Houston bars and restaurants. I'm your host, Culture Map editor Eric Sandler. In this episode, I'm going to have a conversation with someone in the food world I think you'll want to hear from. He is the president of Molina's Enterprises, the company behind Molina's, a Tex-Mex institution that's been open since 1941. Ricardo Molina, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm doing great, Eric. How are you today?
I'm doing just fine. Thanks for doing this. You know, I think, we've recorded like 350 episodes of this podcast. I don't think I've had any other restaurants that go back beyond 1950. So tell me a little bit about your family's history in the restaurant business. What inspired them to open a Tex-Mex restaurant in 1941?
Well, you know, probably they wanted to make a living, obviously, but Mama and Papa, our grandparents, had started it. They immigrated from Mexico separately. Mama came from Guanajuato. Papa came from Nuevo Laredo, and they ended up here in Houston. And they actually met. Mama's maiden name is Saravia. And the Saravia family, she had three brothers, and they all ended up through different paths in Houston. And one opened a store, and one had a bookstore, and one opened up a movie theater. And it's going to come to me here in a minute. I'm ashamed right now to say that I can't remember, but it was first Hispanic movie theater on the north side. They bring in vaudeville shows. They bring in the different movies. The brothers had a newspaper they started as well, talking about the culture here and how the Mexican immigrants could make their way into a new culture and all. And that's where Mama and Papa met. She was there selling tickets, and Papa came in, and they began a romance. Papa, at the time, he got here by digging pipeline ditches to bury gas pipeline. Natural gas was one of the first, whatever the deals that they laid before power was all through the state. They had gas, natural gas pipelines. So it was a caravan. They stopped in Houston, and the story goes, Papa didn't like cold weather. They were headed north. They're going to go towards Dallas. He said, I'm going to try my luck in Houston. He was a busboy. He was a dishwasher. He worked at James's Coney Island. He worked his way up to be a counterman from being a dishwasher. He told me that he spoke more Greek than English when he first got here. So that was kind of way back when. And then they opened a restaurant called Old Monterey Inn on West Gray. They lived upstairs, had a restaurant downstairs, and they did that for several years. And they had my dad and my Uncle George, who was my dad's younger brother. And then they had an opportunity to buy this restaurant called Mexico City Restaurant and over on Main Street, and they moved over to that location down from the old Sears. And that's Main Street was Main Street. It was, you know, the Main Street. It was a focus.
Right. You mean the Main Street location that was until a couple of years ago in Midtown?
The Sears?
The Sears. Yes, sir. I'm sorry.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Okay. Block and a half down from that. They're one of the first that had air conditioning. That's where you would see sometimes when people do a retro deal where they'll paint blue clouds on the glass of a restaurant. That was to indicate that you had conditioned air. Obviously, it's hot. It's hot down here in the summer. You're from
right.
You know all about that. Papa said that during the summer, they would lay off at least half their help because nobody would eat Mexican food in the summer. It was a winter, cool weather deal. And then, you know, all these people of this age group have passed since. But just like older folks wouldn't eat pork in the summer, older folks wouldn't eat Mexican food in the summer. It was just kind of the way it was. So that obviously has changed. It's probably one of our best times of the year, summertime. I think we're the air conditioning capital of the world in Houston with a good need. So that's how they started.
Right. The spicy food is has a kind of a cooling effect, at least psychologically, I find.
Well, it wasn't back then.
Fair enough. All right. So they're operating this restaurant in Midtown. When did they kind of brand it as Molina's explicitly?
That started back in the 50s, late 50s and all. My dad opened a place, actually where Claiborne's Cafeteria is on Bissonnette. When he got out of the army, that was his first location of his own. When they got out of the service, my dad and my uncle, they came back and found that Papa had made them partners. Bissonnette ended right there. And then they did this major construction, and I guess there's like a, it's not a ditch or a bayou or a big drainage culvert there. If you look, I think it's still there. It might be covered up now, but back then it really just drove things crazy in the area. They ended up having to close that location, and then it's just started moving that way to Molina's Mexico City Restaurant, branding it like that back in the again late 50s, early 60s. And kept that going for quite some time. That was before liquor by the drink as well. So then it evolved to, everybody kept calling it Molina's, 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 and dropped the Mexico City restaurant. And then when you start looking at naming something on a menu, on a logo, on a sign, on anything, it just became very long and wordy. And so it kind of fell off. And then we started adding Molina's Mexican Restaurant and Cantina because everybody had bars. And then again, everybody kept calling it Molina's, Molina's. So that's what we went to this day. Save
Right.
on logos.
So talk me through the evolution of your locations, because I mean now you have three, right? There's the one in Bel-Air, there's the one on Westheimer, and there's one way out in Fulshear that's
Culture.
relatively new. I remember it wasn't that long ago that you had a location on Washington Avenue.
Yeah, we got into that, did a 10-year initial lease, and we got into parking wars. There wasn't, there's a lot of regulations you get put in or restrictions you get put in your lease, and hindsight's 20/20, but there was not supposed to be bars in there. They're high, you come one to a car, restaurants probably three to a car, and so that became a mess. And I just got tired of fighting it.
Well, but tell me about how long have you been in Bel-Air and on Westheimer?
Westheimer, Dad put that spot on Westheimer in 1966, I believe it was. He opened up out there, and at the time, Papa and my Uncle George were still in business with him. And they told him he was crazy, that he was going to go broke out there because Westheimer's nothing but a cow trail. And you're from Houston. If you recall that far back, you didn't go outside the Loop. The Galleria was the end of the world. And he put this thing out there. It was actually Bud Bigelow's Steakhouse, if you can have any memory or recall on that. That's a while back, too. Bud
Yeah,
Bigelow.
I mean, my memory of that part of Westheimer goes back to about the San Francisco Steakhouse. But of course, I know that area. I mean, we know that area now for, I mean, all kinds of restaurants. Fogo de Chão and everything else. It's kind of west of the Pappas Brothers. Everything else that's kind of popped up along that stretch of Westheimer in the kind of the mid to late 90s.
Yeah, well, pre that, it was
Right.
really.
I mean, Hillcroft and Voss must have been, the end of the world, basically, pretty much.
Sure, it really, Westheimer was, it's, if you can see the sign at the Galleria, there's still a sign as FM 1093. Westheimer is 1093.
Right.
And so it was a farm to market 1093 out there. And I don't know when Bud Bigelow's opened his original store, but that's where. Dad took that over. Bud Bigelow bought the land next door, built a restaurant from the ground up, and operated there as a steakhouse for many, many years before there were steakhouses everywhere. There were very few, actually. So that was 66, or maybe 65, but I believe it was 66. I started doing a lot of my dishwashing back there. It was very small. Kitchen was very hot. And then in 1996, the land came for sale next door. It was the old Boston Sea Party. So we bought the land, the building, and everything since we had been leasing the other one at 7933 Westheimer, and moved it over just right across the street. You can throw a rock from one to the other. And that was in 1996. And we're still going out there. And as you know, the neighborhood's changed, as you mentioned, quite a bit. I don't even know how many lanes Westheimer is out there now, but it's
I think it's about 25.
It's real
wide out there.
It's a super highway. It really is. And nobody would have thought that, you know, back then you'd make a drive to Fulshear to go to Dozier's Barbecue, and you'd cross at least Highway 6, and then you wouldn't see anything but pastures until you got to Fulshear. Then there was just that four-way stop and Dozier's and a little store and a gas station. And now it's just grown. It's incredible. Traffic's come with it. That's a problem downside. So that's when that happened. One of the funny thing is Dad said he opened that place on Westheimer for $7,000. There was a body shop next door. He hired the painter. He came in, spray painted the walls, and did a couple of different things. It was like $7,000. And, you know, getting something open back then, and, you know, it probably took as long as it took you to get the work done. And those things have changed quite a bit now, and getting something open.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm sort of curious in sort of how, you know, the restaurant has evolved. I mean, you know, I'm old enough to have memories of going to Felix and that being kind of a retro kind of Tex-Mex restaurant. Or I'll even make the drive out to Larry's every now and then in Richmond, and that, you know, that place feels like it's frozen in time. And I don't have that feeling when I go to Molina's. Molina's feels like it sort of balances paying homage to its roots, but also feeling like a contemporary Tex-Mex restaurant. So tell me a little bit about how y'all do that in terms of staying current, but also, I mean, people still want to come for cheese enchiladas and Jose's dip. You're never going to change that.
No. And it's walking a tightrope. You know, we've got original recipes and things that have been on the menu since 1941. We're not going to change those. And if we try, it's just terrible. The guest, you know, we've got people that are fourth generation and probably even more that are coming in there, and people come in weekly, sometimes twice a week. And if you change anything, it's usually not out of necessity. It's usually because of a shortage or something, and people will nail you to it. I mean, they can tell you more than I can tell you that something changed. So we've got to keep that. On the other hand, we have to kind of, you know, roll with the times and try to keep up with the new trends. And, you know, we're not real big on chasing trends because they seem to come and go, and a lot of times very rapidly. But yeah, it's a balancing act, very much so.
Say a little more about that. I mean, how do you, you know, obviously you've got to keep the old stuff, but what are some of the things you've sort of introduced over the years to stay current and stay on top of what maybe a younger generation wants from you?
Sure. You know, Tex-Mex restaurants didn't used to have fish. They didn't have seafood to speak of. Soups and salads weren't a thing. Things like that are probably the most common that we've added. You know, you've got enchiladas, rice, beans, tamales, and so on. Again, those things are there. But again, it's kind of a balancing act. And, you know, one thing we battle is trying to roll out a new item and your guests come in. If you worked at our place three Friday nights, you're going to know 80% of our guests and know them. You get to know them well. We have our guests are the best in the world. But, you know, you come in, hey, would you like to try this, try that? You know, a lot of times they don't even order. The wait staff just knows what they want. And so that's the other side of it, trying to get somebody to get off their comfort, get out of their comfort level, change lanes and try something different. That's always a challenge for us. And we stay on the wait staff. Hey, suggestive sell. And they say, ah, that's not what Eric wants. Eric gets this every time he comes in. And so we understand that piece as well. So it's a balancing act.
I mean, one of the other sort of big changes, I think, as you've sort of evolved over the years is, cocktail culture and expectations for margaritas and all that stuff. I mean, you mentioned the restaurant goes back to the days when you couldn't buy liquor by the drink. Obviously, it's almost unthinkable to have a Tex-Mex restaurant now without, shaken and frozen margaritas. So tell me about that side of your business and kind of how what you've observed as that's evolved from the 60s until now.
Yeah, we had everybody had Carta Blanca, Bohemia, Dos Equis was around, and you'd have Budweiser, maybe Schlitz, and that was your selection. Then you had, I like to tell people we had wine, we had red, white, and blue. We just had covered the bases. Very few drank wine, and beer was the mover. And I guess it was 70, early 70, 71, 72, three, somewhere around there. They did liquor by the drink, and a couple of issues pop up. One, you don't have space for a bar because we just didn't have it. Bars take up a lot of room. The first bar we had on Westheimer was very, very small, little piece of furniture actually, and they were making margaritas on the rocks, or actually straight up was real popular then as well. And then the ad saw somewhere in Dallas there for some reason or another, and he saw the frozen margarita machine and he got one. And Miss Garbett says that she had the first one in Houston, and God bless her if she said that, I'll believe her. But we had one 5 minutes after, and that was a big deal. I mean, that was absolutely huge. We brought in a few more liquors, but for the most part, it was margaritas and frozen margaritas. Some people, frown on frozen margaritas, but I think it's a great way to do a drink, because if you do it on the rocks, if you don't drink it quickly, it gets so diluted so quickly that it really loses the flavor. It's just too watery. So the frozen are still our number one mover and seller. We always made them with fresh lime juice and just an old standard ratio: two tequila, one triple sec, and one lime juice. It's very potent. It's not one of these 20-ounce, lemonades type deals. And that's something that's kind of hard to, convince some people that they need to be really big and like that. So now we roll on to where we are now, and we try a lot of different things, but the margaritas are still the most popular, as opposed to, say, vodka drinks, and which is close number two. But vodka drinks and whiskeys, we don't sell too much of, even though whiskeys have, come up and become very, very popular. It's different flavored margaritas and on the rocks and all. That's been kind of fun to do. Gives you a lot of latitude to
I
be
mean,
creative.
maybe that's the other reason people eat Tex-Mex in the summer now, is they have a nice cool frozen margarita to cool them off a little bit. They didn't have that in those early locations.
Yeah, no, they didn't. And you got to be careful there. Back in, I guess it was in the 80s, we had a Marquee, and I thought I was a marketing genius. They had just started bringing in Corona. For years, you didn't have Corona here in the States. And I put on the sign on the Marquee, ice cold Corona. And I thought I was just the smartest guy in town. And it was Friday night at 7:30, these two TABC guys walked in and wanted to talk to me. And I said, yeah, what's up? And he said, that's a violation of their marketing practices. I could put Corona, but couldn't put ice cold. And so I went and took it down. It's
I've never heard that.
enticement.
Oh,
Yeah.
okay.
So I didn't do it again, but I thought it worked well.
I mean, it sounds like a brilliant idea to me. I
Yeah,
guess, could it be ice cold beer? Was that so you just couldn't, could it not
well,
be?
maybe, but I'll tell you, if you want to get confused, ask TABC about marketing rules.
Right. I think they had to dial back on some of that stuff. It turned out that it was a My vague memory, and this is me sort of speculating, but there was some freedom of speech issues with some of those codes. They had to relent on some of that stuff, but
Yeah, they might have become more agreeable, which they have become a lot more agreeable, in recent years. So they're not bad to work with at all.
all right. Well, tell me about opening up in Fulshear, because like you said, I mean, even when I was growing up in Houston in the 80s and 90s, that was a real small town. Now it's this bustling suburb and kind of extension of Katy. But I mean, tell me what your business has been like since you opened out there a couple of years ago.
Yeah, business has been good. I moved to Fulshear November. Last November was 20 years. I got married. Got married a little bit late. Amy, my wife, got pregnant. We decided we wanted to move out to the little town that you spoke of. So we moved out there, and it was great. It was nice. There was not many places to eat at all, and it was still a manageable size town. And then all of a sudden, it just absolutely took off. The beltway, the West Park Tollway got completed. That was a huge piece of it. And then these neighborhoods popped up. I don't know how they pop up and they're full immediately. I don't know where all these people come from. So we decided we'd look out there to do a deal. We got in the middle of building it out and so on and so forth, and COVID hit. And that was challenging, along with, just normal issues of getting open, having, the date being somewhat of a moving target to get open. Then you try to hire people. We don't have a lot of apartment complexes in Fulshear. There's no bus lines. So trying to locate and hire and train and so on and so forth, it was difficult. We would bring in people from our other locations to train to get open. That's somewhat of a logistical nightmare and transportation problem. So that all went well. And then I guess when we opened up, my memory's correct that we were at 50% seating. You remember those days? So we did that, and it worked well, and people were dying to get out. And when you open a new restaurant, people aren't kind. They all want to be there the first night. You would like to sneak in the neighborhood, but that doesn't work that way. So it was fun. It was great. We had some road construction issues that have made things kind of a little bit difficult, but we've dealt with those everywhere in Houston as well over the years. But things are going well, but we're still like everybody else. It was a tough labor market before COVID. It's been a lot tough for the last 10 years, and COVID didn't do us any favors. And so we're all fighting for the same staff. That's been our biggest issue.
But you also have a lot of staff who have been with you 20, 30, 40 years, I suspect.
We have I'd say a core group, 70% or so that have been with us many, many years. We got some of the second generation, third generation staff been with us. The parents work there, they've worked there, their kids are working there now. We got a kitchen manager, Don Johnny, been with us, I think, 36 years or so. And his youngest son is our KM at now he's at Bel Air, and I held him in diapers, and he's twice my size. That's a real cool deal for us. We enjoy that piece of it, but it's that other percentage. It's a turnover, and then you try to get some, younger folks. And of course, we're full service. We're table service, and that's a challenge these days, because it's not a natural for some of these people. They didn't grow up with full service to understand what exactly it is. It really takes a lot to teach them.
Tell me about your family. I mean, you're the third generation. What about the next generation? Are your children and your brother's children, are they excited about continuing this legacy on?
I my older brother, Raul, he's got two sons. One's selling parts for airplanes or something like that. He got a business degree, and he did work with us growing up, but he doesn't seem to have that interest. He got his other son is an engineer, and he flies between Texas and Asia a lot, doing something with chips. Can't explain it to a guy like me, but I don't think that's in the cards. My younger brother has a daughter. I'm not sure that she's leaning that direction. And I've got two daughters that are in college right now. So I don't really know. One's studying accounting and finance, and she's actually at this moment in Greece for spring break with school. I don't know what she's doing there, but learning international business. And then a younger one is a freshman. So I don't know. We haven't answered that yet. That's an elusive question there right now.
Yeah, the future. I mean, you know, the future of this staple restaurant that so many generations of Houstonians love. I mean, it, you know, because it seems like you had enough success in Fulshear that you, I wouldn't be surprised if you're thinking about other kind of far out suburbs, Rosenberg, Conroe, Tomball. I mean, I think you'd be welcomed in any of those kind of environments. Magnolia, maybe.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's, there's a lot there. One, who's going to run it? That's a question you're really tapping on. The cost of doing restaurants these days is absolutely extraordinary. And we've never brought in partners. I don't really have a desire to bring in partners. And that's, you know, it's probably one of the problems a lot of places have. You got so many partners, you don't, they're hard to manage. It's hard enough to manage a business. It's tough to do it these days. The cost, we got lucky, Fulshear, that we did pre-COVID. The prices of materials after that doubled and tripled on some things. Not even talking about the availability, that you couldn't get it, and how much it would cost if you did get it. The labor cost skyrocketed. It hasn't come down. And then the food cost. They haven't come down. They've come down some from their peak, but they're not back to where, you know, we're used to. So then you're stuck with this whole raising the menu price again, where you, most places, a lot of places would do an annual increase and be able to cover things and make a turn profit. You know, you're looking at doing it every, you know, quarter or 6 months or something like that. It's just kind of stabilized, but man, it's been tough. It's been tough on a lot of folks.
Yeah, I mean, it's been tough on the restaurants. It's been tough on the customers. It, you know, look at a plate of enchiladas, and you know, it costs $4 or $5 more than it did maybe 5 or 6 years ago, and it's hard to understand. But then you go to the grocery store, and everything's more expensive there too. So it all adds up.
Yeah, you're exactly right. You know, people can say what they say about, you know, menu prices. All you have to do is go to the store and try to cook for two or three in your house. And number one, it takes a good while, and it costs you. You don't leave there for less than $50, and then you got to go home and cook it and clean up and all that. So we do provide a good value still. It's just not the value it was 5 years ago. It's, you know, been tough.
All right. Well, let's end this on a more optimistic note.
Please.
I mean, I suspect that most of the people who are going to listen to this have been to Molina's once or twice, but maybe a lot more than that. But for anybody who hasn't, talk me through the menu a little bit. Kind of where do you suggest people start?
Yeah, you know, it really depends on what mood you're in. We got a section of Tex-Mex favorites, just enchiladas, crispy tacos, chalupas, tamales with chili, which we make our own chili and use chili grind meat. We still use our chili ancho to make the chili paste and all that. You know, we do a lot of most scratch cooking, which is difficult to, you know, time consuming, expensive, and it takes a lot to train people to do that. You don't find chili on the menus much anymore. They would say it's chili sauce or chili gravy or chili something. So that's a good plate. We make our tamales in-house as well. You know, then you go to the grilled items, which that I guess it was back in the 70s, late 70s, mid 70s, something like that, that the fajitas and grilled items became real popular. Before then, it was really Tex-Mex. So we have, grilled redfish and, fish tacos, grilled shrimp, and make a good fried shrimp, actually. So those things, it depends on what you like. I like combination plates myself because I like to get a little bit of everything. And of course, you need to have a margarita, either that or a beer, but margaritas really go well.
I mean, you told me that your tequila or your frozen is half tequila. That's very appealing to me. That's speaking my language.
Yeah, and also we use a good tequila. We use 100% agave tequila. We've had the same supplier. I think we've had him for 23 years, 24 years now. I got a quick education on tequila way back then when there was a problem with the agave. I think it got cold in Mexico, and they were rotting. Would they get a fungus or something like that? There was a shortage. And then I found out to be tequila, it's got to be 51% agave, derived from agave. The other 49 can be spirits of some nature. And then they came out with products. You had to really read the label. It said tequila liqueur. And the labels all look the same except that one little word down there. That meant it could be less than 51% in flavorings. And then people came out with, basically, it was Everclear, 100, 151 proof, and it had agave flavorings in it. And some people were using that, and I'm like, oh, I
No,
don't
you
think
gotta, it's gotta be 100% agave for me.
gotta be 100% agave. You gotta have fresh lime juice, and that'll get you fixed up. That'll get you where you want to be.
All right. Well, I appreciate your time. I have to say that does bring me to the end of my questions. Is there anything I haven't asked you about that you would like to discuss?
No, I mean, except that support family business. We've got a great group of family businesses in Houston across the board. I'm proud to say that I know most, if not all of them. Some are really good friends, and we're the ones that support the Little League and the rodeos, which we do a ton with the rodeo and all those, the Girl Scouts and all that kind of stuff. And go out. I also would like to see people go out and make a judgment for themselves. Online, reviews and whatnot. You're an expert in this. You've been doing this for decades. There's people, and they say, "Hey, I didn't like that. Don't go there." Well, maybe you didn't like it. Maybe the next guy would. So go out and come in and say. And if there's an issue in the house, ask to have it fixed.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't like it as only as compelling as your taste, right? Like if you don't know what it's supposed to taste like, or you don't have a lot of experience with the cuisine, you not liking it may not be anything, may not mean anything other than you didn't like it, right? It could be other people could think it's very delicious. So yeah, I don't, I had someone message me recently and said, what do you think about the value of a Yelp review? And I said, I don't really put much stock in any individual's Yelp review. Maybe you look at the aggregate and if you see a trend or certain things, maybe that points you to something. But really, all I use Yelp for is to see the pictures that people posted of a restaurant's food to just kind of give me an idea of what I'm in for. Even before I was writing, I've always wanted to make up my own mind about whether I like the place or not.
Sure. But this has been a great industry for us. The city's been wonderful to us. I said something earlier about our guests. We've got the best guests, I think, in the world. Wonderful people. And of course, our staff, they're like family to us. We try to treat the guests and our staff like family. It's a lot of fun to work there with us. I enjoy it.
Well, good. I'm glad to hear that. That seems like a good place to wrap this up. Why don't you give us the website and the social media for Molina's?
Sure, it's Molina's at Molina's Cantina, www.molinascantina.com. And that's the extent of my social media status. You can find us there. We're on Facebook and everywhere. I am not this, I need my daughters here to help me with social media. I'm ashamed to say.
All right. Well, Ricardo, thanks so much for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
You can follow me on Instagram at Eric Sandler. Keep it locked on culturemap.com for all the latest Houston bar and restaurant news. Thanks so much for listening. I'll be back next week.